That was the first time I ran into the Christian evangelistic assault. This was composed of 18-year-old Christian stormtroopers who had eyed me for an evangelistic assault on their own for the first time, overflowing with excitement about their new venture. And they were eager to into combat, for the righteous fervor had driven them to pursue this educational route. Immediately, they began to search for heathens to convert. And my lack of fervor made me the chief suspect. Long before, I was a full-fledged mission project whose soul was sought with the vengeance. I really wasn't that bad. I didn't smoke, I didn't chew, I'd given up drinking for school, and I hardly cursed. That seemed unimportant to them, that I had just become a Christian months before, because they didn't have their zeal, and because I didn't fit their pattern, I was one of them. At least still one of them. The first attack wasn't so subtle. I didn't see it coming. Not ready to take on the task that my mother had been doing for me, I used my charm to charm some co-eds into doing my laundry each week. Well, I thought it was my charm. I soon discovered they did it because they had chosen me as their mission project. They returned every shirt and pair of pants with neatly typed scriptures in every pocket. They never asked me if I read the verse or if I knew it was there. They appeared to want to convert me by osmosis, to get the truth next to me and somehow it would seep into me. I never did anything to dissuade them. Why should I? I didn't mind to be a walking Bible in return for all my washing clothes and ironed. So gradually I felt my niche was filled. I learned to avoid the most intense students, and I was doing okay. Until the state fair came in the late fall, and that changed all that. The day the fair opened, the leading members of the Campus Preachers Club walked unannounced into my dorm room. They identified themselves as Pi Sigma Delta. We knew them as the group of fiery young Bible majors who had appointed themselves as guardians of our soul. These scholars had decided I was too spiritually weak to be allowed to visit the fair unchaperoned. After all, they said I would most likely gamble for stuffed zebras, and then I would lose my soul. They informed me that Charlie, a freshman Bible major from a rural section of Alabama, would go with me. Charlie didn't look too enthused about the prospect, stucking in his head and turning a little red around the edges. But as a good soldier, he would do his duty, and so would I. I knew it was good for me eventually. That's how I found myself ambling along with Charlie that evening, and he was miserable and grouchy. He wasn't having a good time because he had to watch me. He couldn't ride on the rides. So every time we passed a mechanical monster tossing and screaming and laughing victims around, he would start mumbling under his breath and glaring at me. I didn't care. He would have to threaten to flog me, and I still would refuse to go on rides with him. All I can do was think of that stuffed zebra and my resentment for his standing between me and such a wonderful prize. Of course, I hadn't even thought of a stuffed zebra until they came in and said I would gamble for a stuffed zebra. Things livened up to him when we came to the carnival barker doing his best to draw a crowd. Hurry, 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 step right up, pay $1, see the show. Behind him were several scantily clad young ladies smiling and winking at various people in the crowd. Glancing in his way, I noticed his eyes were glazed over. They were wide-eyed. They stared glued to one of those beauties. He seemed like he was hypnotized by their sensuality. And seeing the chance to gall this young preacher, I told him what they were going to do inside. In front of all those people, he said in his reply, "That's why they charge you $1, Charlie," I replied with a grin. He ripped his eyes from the girls and returned to look intently at me. "How do you know that? Have you ever been to one of these shows, Beam?" My little plot died a quick, anguished death. Instead of embarrassing and angering Charlie, I had set myself up for perjuring at the hands of Pi Sigma Delta. I dropped my head as I admitted to Charlie I'd been to a girly show the year before. But then I was converted, and so everything else had been forgiven. With as much piety as he could muster, he quivered. "Do good church people go into a place like that?" "Yeah, Charlie," I carefully crafted into my voice devout tones. I was learning at school so Charlie would know how sorry I was. I'd been previously involved in such sordid practices. I'm not sure he heard anything I said, but he was concentrating on those girls, the blonde with the smile. And he was giving her a smile right back. "Oh no," I inwardly pleaded. Warning bells were going off in my head. "Don't look at him. Don't let him. I know what he'll do. He's going to start preaching. Right here in front of the tent, he's going to start preaching. And then what am I going to do?" But incredibly, hesitatingly, he simply smiled back at the brazen blonde. It was only a small but a definite smile. He hesitated and looked up the midway and down the midway and said, "Let's go in there." "Charlie," I said, "I'm surprised at you. How can I preach against it if I don't know what it is?" he said with nearly a shout. He was defiant, mouth set, eyes blazing, determined. It was obvious. He didn't want an argument. He just wanted me to agree. And that's exactly what he got. I was happy to follow him into this place. This was going to be better than the stuffed zebra. The preacher students themselves had said I wasn't spiritual. That's why they assigned me my chaperone, my spiritual guide, my protector. And he was going there. Well, who was I to question? I, the campus reprobate, was being shown the light. Quickly reaching into my pocket, I pulled out a dollar and thrust it into the cashier's hand. He glanced at it and says, "A buck, buddy. It cost a buck." Too late, I realized that the paper in my hand wasn't money at all. It was one of those scriptures the co-eds had diligently planted for my deliverance. In front of the tent of temptation, I was viewing a Bible verse. Maybe the co-eds knew exactly what they were doing all along. The passage, James 1, 13 through 50. Sternly he pointed his finger at me and thundered, "Let lust leads to sin, and sin leads to death." Death at my age was one thing I knew without a doubt. If I was going to die, I wanted to be sure I was with someone I liked. I was teetering on the brink of disaster, and panic slipped through me. I was 18. I was too young to die. "I can't go, Charlie." "Why not?" "I found this scripture in my pocket." "Well, for Pete's sake, don't show it to me," he yelled. I didn't show it to him. I slid it back into my pocket and stood there, rooted to the ground, speechless. Charlie handed over his dollar and resolutely walked up the stairs and disappeared through the curtain into the world of the enticing blonde. When he emerged 30 minutes later, I stood waiting. Neither of us said a word. We just looked at each other for a long moment and then started for the car. There was nothing to say. It'd been a night of learning for both of us, and we each had serious thinking to do. And as we drove back to campus, I gently was stroking my new stuffed zebra. That's, yeah, Beam, yeah, B-A-M, yeah. Yeah.
He writes articles in the Gospel.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Does it ring? What do you think when people you know who are Christians sin?
We all sin.
We all. But suppose they know you're a Christian and they see you sin. Hypocrite's one of the words. If I'm disappointment, that's a good word. If I don't get more than this, I'm gonna call on William.
It hurts.
One more, William, or you're in trouble. Gotta have one more. William.
Backslider.
That's all good stuff. What does God think? That's where we're going tonight. What does God think? Kirk, can you go back and kick that thing? That's human nature. That's a good point.
I think God would think that he knew all along. That's the reason he could
be. I didn't hear you.
He knew all along that we were going to sin as we go along. And I think that's why he gave us the ability to repent.
Very good. It's moving now. Okay, we're going to use James 1, 13 through 15. Who would like to read? Mike.
When tempted, no one should say, "God is tempting me." For God cannot be tempted by evil, desire, he is dragged away and enticed. Then, after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death.
Okay. Interesting. But I put this in for a reason. The Gnostics claimed they had no sin. That was a physical thing, not a spiritual thing, so they had nothing against them, no sin. And when John writes, he gets kind of harsh. If you say you have no sin, truth's not in you. Yeah. You're just deceiving yourselves if you say there's no sin there. If we claim that we have not sinned, we make him. Who's the whom? Him. Jesus. I heard it. Okay. We make Jesus out to be a liar, and his word has no place in our lives. Okay. Let's talk about desire. And try to get a working definition for it. So this is the NIV on top. It just says evil desire. In James 1:14, the Amplified tries to get us there, but every person is tempted when he is drawn away. That's a good translation also. The BBE, Bible in Basic English, but every man is tested when he's turned out of the right way by the attraction of his desire. Or each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. In James 1, this is the Young Literal Translation, and I like it a lot. And each one is tempted by his own desires. So what is it saying? Okay, that you want something. Good. Uh-huh. That is very true.
And we hold some responsibility here.
Okay, good.
When Eve was tempted in Genesis 3, it talks about her seeing that the tree was good for food. And it was something that she felt like would work for her, but then it said that she was desiring the wisdom. So in that context, desire is when you feel a need for something.
Very good.
Whether it's a good need or a bad need, you know, you can desire good things as well as evil things. So desire itself is not a bad thing, okay? It simply talks about this is what I'd like to have. This is what I'm seeking.
Uh-huh. Very good. Was that you, Kurt? You moved your hand. Oh, you were scratching your head. Okay. It's dangerous in my class.
Some people equate a desire to a need. That's up to the definition, I guess.
It can also be a want.
Can be a want. A big want. But this shows us that we are not evil by nature. Sometimes when people see a Christian do something wrong, they just look at him and say, well, he's got a hard heart. Well, if you messed up, that just means you don't want to follow God. That's not true. That's not even close to being true. Okay? Here's my definition. You get a craving. I told Sue I was going to do this. When she was carrying Michelle, that's a long time ago, 39 years ago, she would get cravings. Ice cream was always in the craving, always. But she would put chocolate in there. I want ice cream with chocolate on top. And That was okay. Sometimes instead of chocolate, you wanted butterscotch. So you could drizzle butterscotch over it. The one that really floored me is she wanted ice cream with turnips one night. Now I live, what we lived when she when was carrying Michelle, we lived in a little itty bitty town in West Virginia. I mean, if they'd had walks, they would have rolled them up at 3 p.m. There's just nothing there. So to get her what she wanted, I had to get in the car and drive about, what, 20 miles to Fairmont? Yeah, close. And sometimes I would find what she wanted, and sometimes I wouldn't. But that's craving. And you don't have to be pregnant to do it. Let's see, who don't want to put on a diet? Jim Seltzer. He goes on a diet. What's he going to crave? What he can't have. You can't have the chocolate banana split with the 3 scoops of ice cream and the whipped cream on top and the cherries all down on the 3. Can't have that if you're on diet. But when I tell him that, he says, that's just what I want. Do you know why most people don't have success dieting? They can't keep to it. So they do it for 2 or 3 days and they say, oh, I've got to have some, and whatever that is.
Just a little bit.
Yes, just a little bit, just enough. Okay, one more. So it's women who are pregnant. If you have ever been on a diet, it is also what you're told you cannot have.
Think about it. But if it has to go in the shop for 3 hours one day, and there's no vehicle in the driveway, even though you don't have anything planned or whatever, you're frustrated because your vehicle's not there if you need it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the I can't have whatever it is.
Yeah. And we focus in on what I can't have. This was the stuffed zebra. He didn't want the stuffed zebra. Somebody said, you cannot have a stuffed zebra. You cannot gamble to get a stuffed zebra. I don't know how long it took him to win the stuffed zebra, but he was going to win it. It was within a half hour, so that's the idea of it. What can I do about it? This is a... some of the things that we do in counseling. Some people come in and say, this is what I did. I said, where are you going to be when you get where you're going? Don't say, oh, this is wonderful. No, where are you going to be if you get where you're going? Is this going to be happiness at the end of this road, or is this going to have consequences that you really don't want?
Some people never think about that.
A lot of people don't think about that. William, you're moving your hand. That's dangerous in my class, too. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just thinking to myself, a lot of times you have a desire, but you think it's all right. You think it's acceptable until you kind of figure that it's not. Let me give you an example. When I first became a Christian, I was kind of gung-ho and, you know, really on my soapbox and telling people about the Lord and everything. And many times they wouldn't react the way I think they should react, so I kind of, in a way, would kind of say, you know, God is going to get you and that type of thing. But when you read the life of Jesus, you can read all 4 Gospels. Jesus talked to everybody that the Pharisees said don't talk to. He talked to the Samaritans, he talked to the Romans, he talked to the lame, he talked to all the undesirables. He talked to the woman who was committed adultery, everybody. And then, you know what? I came at one stage in my life and I said, am I more like Jesus or am I more like the Pharisee? I know a lot of people don't think that crazy like I do, but then I say, wait a minute, I want to be more like Jesus. I don't want to be so restricted to say, you're not good enough to be with God. And that's what I was really saying.
Mm-hmm.
So I was immature spiritually, but sometimes you think your desires are good when they're not.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Sometimes desires can consume you. You can get your recreation and it can control you. I've had an uncle who threw 4 perfect games in bowling. And they gave him a ring with 4 diamonds in it because you usually don't have 300 games where every time you roll the ball down, it's a strike. He spent 9 to 10 hours when he went to the bowling alley. Now, is bowling wrong? But he spent 9 to 10 hours. And his kids didn't get to see him, and his wife did, but only after he came home at night, because he worked during the day. That's a craving. What happens when this desire or craving goes? How far am I allowing it to consume me? It can be a good thing, a job. A woman told me she was bringing her husband in to see me. And I thought that was marvelous because husbands don't like to go to counselors as a rule. And she said, asked him. I said, you don't want me to ask. She said, asked him. I said, okay, who's older, Johnny or Jerry? And he said, I don't know. She said, asked him. And I looked at him and he says, what's the family's dog's name? And he said, I don't know. I just asked him. Who are your next door neighbors? He didn't know. And she says, asked him if he knows if there's a back door to this place or not. He didn't know. And yet he had a family, but he was always working.
That's probably the most common thing I've seen with people I work with. If people, jobs, it, that's the whole consuming thing.
Kirk, you move your hand again.
I'm a physical guy.
Okay. Are my actions right or wrong according to the Bible? Underline according to the Bible. Because people will tell you things are wrong that aren't in the Bible that are wrong. That this is wrong because we think it should be wrong. If it's not according to the Bible, then you got to sit down and ask yourself other things. Here's one thing that I think is vital. If you are having problems spiritually, find yourself a very spiritual person and talk to them. Tell them what's going to happen. Now, if they're not a spiritual person, don't do that. You leave yourself wide open. But who is a spiritual person who can sit there and help you and will keep it to themselves? And that's the reason for Proverbs. How are we doing? Paul.
Hebrew writer said in Hebrews 5, solid food is for the mature,
who by constant use have trained themselves to distinguish good from evil. So there's activity all the time. You're constantly using what you've learned. You're applying things to your life every day. And it's through the constant use that you develop a sense of knowing whether it's good or not good.
Yeah.
But you can know all the things that are here, but if there's not a constant use of them, you're not being trained and you're not training yourself for being able to distinguish the good and the bad.
Very good. A young lady came for counseling. She said God told her to go marry this guy. And I said, how'd you know it was God? She said, well, you just know. And I said, so you're telling me that this God that you heard voice to voice told you to marry somebody else and leave your current situation, husband and kids, and that was from God? And she said, yeah. Now, why would she say yeah?
Maybe she was hearing things.
What she never thought of is what happens to the people she was leaving behind. What about her husband and kids? What happens to them? You see, if you're going to hurt a lot of people and hurt other folks, then okay? How will they be affected spiritually? You got the craving. How's it affect you spiritually? You ought to see William. I'll come back and talk to William. I'm talking about bad cravings. John. It does take over. Yeah. It just crowds everything out of your life except it. And it really controls you. And sometimes, you know, you can get these people who are trying, but they can't get rid of something in their minds. And that's when you sit down and help them. What are the consequences in my own life? The lady?
I have a question there. I guess the first one you were asking about how other people be affected.
Yes. Paul.
The things you're talking about there, though, require thought.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? An awful lot of the time when we're going through life, we do kind of what I call a zombie thing. There's mindless activity. So I may eat several things that I really wouldn't be good if I ate them, you know, too much cake or too much whatever. I know you don't have a problem with chocolate, but some people do. But there are a lot of mindless activities that we just do. And then after we do them, we start thinking, why did I do that?
Uh-huh.
Why did I eat that? I know that how that's going to make me feel because I know how it made me feel yesterday. But it's still a mindless activity. The things you keep bringing up, like how will you be affected, how will they be affected, that requires thought.
Mm-hmm.
And thought is where a lot of the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
It's afterthought.
Yeah. Very good. I'll catch you in a second, okay? This is one of my favorite quotes. It's by James Dobson. If you don't know who James Dobson is, he's a Christian psychologist. He's Baptist. But his saying is, if you think the grass is greener on the other side, just remember it has to be mowed more often.
When you fertilize the lawn, think about it.
And sometimes we don't think about it. Greg, do you want to say something?
No.
Your hand's up.
Well, I will say something.
Okay. Yeah, it is for a lot of people. And we'll catch up to your example here in a second, too.
You had a question up there, how does it affect you spiritually? And when I look at Isaiah 59:2, it says, but your iniquities have separated you from your God, and your sins have hidden his face from you. It goes on and on and on. But that's how it affects you spiritually. And getting back to Greg talking about blaming somebody else, a lot of times when I remember I was talking to this guy, and he worked at the Space Center, and he had four girls, and his wife decided to leave him, and she met somebody who's with a motorcycle gang, and she was getting on the motorcycle, and she was driving away, she yelled at him, it's all your fault. So I think a lot of times when we do something and change our behavior, a lot of times we blame the person who is close to us, you know, as you driven me to this.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. A lot of people put God on the podium. If you focus on the evil thing that you want to do, it can become overwhelming. And we're going to talk about that. He is dragged away and enticed. As I said, I'm just going to catch up to Greg. This is interesting in the Greek. It's a word of an occupation, fishing. There's two ways of fishing in this day. One is nets. You get the net, you put them over the boat, you bring it back, the fish who are in the net get put in the boat, and then you go sell them. Also fish traps. Fish traps were made out of reeds, and they sort of have a funneling look, and the fish goes down, and he usually can't back up. So he's trapped. It helps us when we look at the Amplified. Every person is tempted when he is drawn away, enticed, and baited by his own evil desires. But evil people are tempted when their own evil desires leads them away and traps them. Everybody who lets desire get a hold on them thinks it'll be all right. Now we have some people that are pretty big. Somebody want to read what's underlined?
You belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, but there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies.
Okay, this is, who's going to know? Who's going to know? It's going to be so wonderful. It's going to be so great. And nobody's going to know.
And that's very important for someone that is Christian.
Very important.
Yeah, because there's a sense of wanting to keep up appearance. You have friends who would look down on you if they knew.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is. Moses is out, and he knows he's a Hebrew. How does he know he's a Hebrew? His mother brought him up in the palace. So he's sort of a Hebrew Egyptian. And he goes out and he finds an Egyptian beating one of his fellow countrymen. And he looks around, doesn't see anybody, and he kills the person that has been hurting one of his fellow Hebrews. And the next day he goes out and finds two Hebrews fighting. And he tries to break it up. And they say, "You gonna kill him? Yeah, are you gonna kill us like the Egyptian you killed yesterday?" He thought all around. He looked all around. He didn't think anybody was gonna find it. But somebody saw.
It's kind of like with Peter when he was denying Jesus, and he looks up and Jesus is looking at him. It changes things.
It really does.
He didn't have to say it.
Okay.
Well, it's the way we behave one way when we're in the house with the doors closed, but if we have company, we behave another way.
Okay.
So I don't, I don't want others seeing me acting like this. I won't.
So if you're on the inside,
whoa. Somebody came to the door, or company came over. The way you treat them would be different.
Uh-huh. Yes.
That's what I'm trying to say.
You run into a situation where lots of times people say, "Well, I've never seen them like that. They're good people. They don't do stuff like that. You didn't see them when I saw them."
Uh-huh. Let me go real quick. I've got things. What happened with Adam and Eve? Did I hear you say something?
Eve ate
the apple. Why? She wanted it, and she was lied to. Okay. Our desires make us sin, and when sin is finished, it leaves us dead. When a person's here, it doesn't matter if they're right or wrong. They just want to do, and that acts up in confusion. This is one of my favorites. Their minds are in the dark, and they are stubborn and ignorant, and they've missed out on the life that comes from God. They no longer have any feelings about what is right, and they are greedy, that they do all kinds of indecent things. Okay, Satan tells you to lie, starts getting you confused. When you start getting confused, there's a danger, and the danger is this: feelings and emotional thinking does not have to have a legitimate basis. What I mean by doesn't have to have. This is Halloween month. There's going to be a lot of movies that get released. And people are going to go in there and they're going to be scared to death. Why are they scared to death? They're actors. They didn't get hurt. They got big pay. And they went home and threw a party and it was great. But we make it real in our thoughts. Yes, and they go with just the emotions. Emotions and feelings have no legitimate basis. If you are completely an emotional person, it is an easy person to manipulate. Here's one that I just sort of pulled out. Well, this person doesn't like me. Why? They didn't speak to me last Sunday. And my next thought is, did you speak to them? Well, no. Okay. Yeah, they looked at me or something like that. That's pure
image. The irony is, lots of times people have things really on their mind. They can look right at you and never see you. Doesn't mean they feel bad toward you.
Mm-hmm.
You can receive it that way.
You sure can. Okay. I have to be perfect at everything I do. What's the truth? There's no perfection in this world. And when we had perfection, we crucified him. There's nothing perfect. So you got to accept that limitation. And here's how he did it. Instead of saying, y'all take this on and go up and do it, God said, I'm going to let Christ take all your sins, and he's going to give you his righteous life, and you can have a relationship with me forever. Questions, comments. We did good. We're getting out on time this week. Okay, see y'all next week. I don't like stuff like this. I'd rather.